Uh-oh, somebody's got their volume and needs to mute. Who is that? There you go. All right, well, Kufar, Akbar, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Cross and the Crescent Discussion Group, and somebody still has a hot mic. Who is this? Who is it? Who is it? There. Okay, it might have been you, Paul. Yeah. Because you and that Macintosh computer that you got, that's got to be what it is. I'm blaming the brand. Okay, well, welcome to the show, everybody. And a couple admin things before we get rolling on today's show. We were out last week. If you don't know why we were out, we had, well, I didn't have any power here at the house. We had a windstorm come through the state. We had 75-mile-an-hour straight-line winds, and it blew down trees, it blew down power lines, it blew down. Well, it didn't blow down this capper. I was still standing, but it was blowing everything from everything sideways in the state, and we were out without power for about not quite three days. I have a small generator, so we were able to plug in the refrigerator and the freezer so the food didn't spoil, but we were using those little, as a matter of fact, I still have my headlamp here where I put the headlamp on it. I wear that around the house. I can see better with that thing on than you can with the lights on. Next week also, we were going to be out because it is my granddaughter's first birthday. And Papa, if I want to keep, I'm going to watch this, folks. I'm going to keep this. If I want to keep this sign right here, I have to go to the birthday party, and the birthday party is Sunday afternoon. So we won't be here next Sunday. One other thing that I wanted to bring up was if you guys get a chance, go over to Bob the Builder's channel. Bob, I think it's Bob at Speaker's Corner, I think is the name of his channel. But I had an opportunity to go on there yesterday. And we discussed the history of Mecca, or not the history of Mecca. We discussed the rebuttal, the Islamic rebuttal to Mecca, and the lack of evidence for it. And we talked about this about a month ago on the show, where this idea that Ptolemy mentions Mecca is proof that Mecca existed in the 7th century. And the bottom line is it didn't. And I took that slideshow that we did a month ago, and I spent some time on it and revamped a lot of it. And it was just, it was a knockout blow. It really was. And we were able to clearly demonstrate not only that Ptolemy does not mention Mecca, but there, when we start talking about there's nobody, and when I say nobody, there's nobody in all of those ancient writings that existed. Because think of when Pliny the... when Ptolemy was in charge of the library in Alexandria, he had access to all of the ancient cartographers, geographers, and all the writings of the locations of all these places that were in Arabia. For centuries, people had gone down there and explored, and he had access to it. And he did. And when they start saying, "Oh, it's a Makaraba," that's a lie. That's a lie from the pit of hell. And the reason why is because when you used Ptolemy's coordinates, because you use meridian mapping, when you use those coordinates, places Makaraba east of Yathrib or Medina. And if you look on a map, Mecca is south and west of Medina. So the bottom line is that this Makaraba shtick does not work and never has. And after that show, I hope we could just refer people over there and say, well, it never will. But it was a good time, and we're going to be bringing Bob to this show in May. We're going to go through some clips from the EF Dawa channel. So, you know what, Chris, I see Chris just showed up. Hey, Mr. Chris, how are you? It's good to see you here, brother. I'm great. Yes, you too. I hear you're really good friends with those girls over there at EF Dawa. I was thinking maybe you could send me maybe a couple clips from them. If you have any type of clips. I mean, there's quality entertainment any way that you can. I mean, if you just maybe a link and say, hey, watch this one or watch this one. Because I mean, I don't know how much time you spend watching those guys, but, I watched one of their videos, and it took me probably a good part of 3 days to get through it. It was just, you really said this, you really said this, you really said that. And it was that, what's the leprechaun? I did not mean to say that. Hamza, I did not mean that, but that's what a lot of people call him. Right, I appreciate that. Anyway, I'll be in contact with you on that. So today what I want to do is I want to talk, I was thinking about this topic for a long time. I've been thinking about this topic because when we engage Muslims, whether what medium it is, whether we're doing it on Facebook, whether you're doing it through Clubhouse, or you're doing it, you know, here on in YouTube, or whatever the medium you're using, you basically hear a standard, you know, a standard set of assertions about Islam. So what I want to do is that today I want to take a look at what those assertions are and how they are what I call Muslim myths, the mythology that we are told. So let me bring this up here. I don't know. I didn't run this by Paul. Paul's usually a pretty good judge of good topics to bring, and I didn't bring this one in front of him, but these are the official lies that we were told. Now, when we look at this topic, when we look at... the next time somebody wants to take me out and cut my head off, well, who was that guy that was in France that was a teacher? He got his head cut off for doing that. Come on. Sorry. Okay, well, regardless, which one is... he's the one. Okay, this would be Muhammad right here, right? That is supposed to be a... All right, guys, let's get off the picture. Let's... here, right here. Well, I know that you're not supposed to... Okay, so let's talk about what a myth is. Now, this is a tradition of a story that is used to describe a practice or a belief or a natural phenomenon. And myths are normally developed in order to do this. And so let's look at a couple examples of these. And when I was looking for these, I was actually kind of surprised at this because some of these I actually believed. Like this first one, it says bulls get angry when they see the color red. Well, bovines are colorblind. So to say that they get angry when they see the color red is simply not true. They get angry when you wave something in front of them and they run at it and they can't hit it. And then you start sticking sharp metallic objects into their back. That's when they do get angry. I can tell you that. So don't be doing that with bulls. We only use 10% of our brain. Well, this is not true. Don't go there. Do not say, I am not going to say followers of Muhammad. I'm not going to say that because that's, okay. Thank you. 5%. But that's a misnomer. George Washington had wooden teeth. That's not true. He had teeth that were false, but they weren't made out of wood. The Salem witch trials, women were burned at the stake. Women were not burned at the stake at the Salem witch trials. They were hung, but they weren't burned at the stake. As a matter of fact, I think they crushed one of them, if I'm not mistaken, maybe even drowned in one. I teach that too. I can't remember exactly how they all died. And they killed. And you know, you sit there and you tell this to a class. You say, and they killed 19 women at the Salem witch trials, and they also killed a dog. And that's when the kids go, oh, they killed it. Look, they just killed 19 human beings, but you're upset because they killed a dog? Really? Yeah, that tells you where the mindset of children is. In 1492, everybody thought the world was flat, and that is not true. That is actually a lie that was developed by who was that guy? Washington Irving, I think, was the name of the guy that developed that lie. And it was mainly an attack on the Catholic Church, or way to, you know, this is what the Catholic Church, we follow what the Catholic Church teaches, we'd still believe that the world was flat and we would never have been able to go out and explore and find an all water, you know, we couldn't do all these things. And that's not true. That's a myth. Marie Antoinette did not say, let them eat cake during the French Revolution. That's not true. The forbidden fruit at the Garden of Eden was an apple. I think most of us here in the chat would understand that's not true either. It's just the tree of good knowledge. And sugar causes hyperactivity in children. Now, to be honest with you, I'm not sure that that's not a myth, or that's a myth. I think there might be a truth to that. I would have to look up the... Are you referring to the Horries? Never mind. The hyperactivity in children. If you give a child, you know, give them a soda and they suck down a soda with all the sugar in there and they start spazzing out. I don't know. There might be some type of causality there or something, but I don't know. I can't get there with children. But anyway, all right. So let's look at some of the myths that we are told when we engage in these topics. Number one, which would be the standard Islamic narrative, the standard history that we get, that we're told about Islam, which we're going to talk about in depth. The Quran has been perfectly preserved. Today, in 2023, we know that is not true. But if you back that up maybe 15, 20 years ago, there was really no way to know that. And people and Muslims got away with it. It's been perfect preservation. It's the same, not a jot, not a tittle, not a diacritical mark. Everything has been perfectly preserved. Well, we know today, thanks to we'll get to that. The Quran is a scientific miracle. Okay, we'll talk about that too. Muhammad was a perfect example for all time. Really? 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 Yeah, we will definitely drill down on that one. Oral transmission is a superior form of transmitting ideas. I'm just telling you, this is what we're told. The science of the Hadith. Don't you know that there is a specific science behind trying to determine what is an authentic, a Sahih, a Hassan, or Da'if Hadith? And we find that science... In the is Islam is peaceful? And women are respected and elevated in Islam. So we're going to go through these, and if there's some other ones that you guys want to talk about, that's fine. And I'm going to go through these rather quickly because I don't want to belabor the point on these, because a lot of these things that the majority of us already are aware of, there might be a point or two that you're not, but let's just get to this. Okay, Mecca. And this is one of the things that I was explaining yesterday on Bob's channel, is that Islam is like a three-legged stool, just like the Christianity is like a three-legged stool. You got death, deity, resurrection. You take away any of those three elements of Christianity, and the whole thing crumbles and falls upon itself. You take away the deity of Christ, Christianity is not true. You take away the death of Christ, Christianity is not true. You take away the resurrection of Christ, Christianity is not true. So you need all three of those things. And the same thing is true with Islam. In Islam, you need a guy by the name, you need a historical figure by the name of Muhammad. You need the Quran to be the perfect word given to Muhammad by the angel Gabriel, by God. And you need, because all of these events happen within a geographic location, a city called Mecca, you need a Mecca. So the bottom line is that we do not have any proof of Mecca. There is no evidence for Mecca in the 7th century. There's no archaeological evidence. There is no geographic evidence. There is no cartological evidence. And there's no manuscript evidence for it. This is only, and plus, Mecca is only mentioned in the Quran one time. I'm not sure if everybody is aware of that. The majority of us are probably aware of that. But it's only mentioned one time, whereas if you look at the city of Jerusalem, is mentioned hundreds of times, 700 and some odd times, if I'm not mistaken. If somebody wants to Google that for me, how many times is Jerusalem mentioned in the Bible. I like to know what that is. Oh, I think it's a lot more than that, to be honest to you, with you. Oh, Jerusalem? What? No, Jerusalem is not mentioned one time in the Quran. They don't, in the Quran, Jerusalem is not mentioned at all. All right. There you go. Okay, and that's just, that's not even included in the New Testament. I mean, that's... Okay, the bottom line, the point I'm trying to make is that it's mentioned one time in the Quran, and this is supposed to be the last revelation given by God to mankind, where all these events supposedly happen, and you look at Jerusalem, in the Bible, and how many times, you know, this is supposed to be where, you know, Jesus was crucified, and all these other events were supposedly happened, where Abraham went to sacrifice Ishmael. Look at that lie they told me that I'm repeating already. Not Ishmael, Isaac. He went to sacrifice Isaac. This is all in Jerusalem. So when we look at the number of times it appears in the Quran, it only appears one time. And then when we've had John Isaac on here, he showed us how you just put a squiggly line on the end of that first letter to the word, and it changes the word Becca to Mecca. So it's probably, we think that it might have been just talking about some other location. But anyway, it also, this is Mecca. When we look at Mecca, this is where the Muslims are commanded five times a day to pray towards Mecca, the Kaaba in Mecca. Five times a day, they're required to go through this ritualistic prayer system that they have, that they think that works off all their gigs. And that's supposed to be pointed towards Mecca. And the problem with that is I pointed out yesterday, using Dan Gibson's Quranic Geography, early Islamic Qiblas, this book right here, this is where somebody like Dan Gibson has actually gone out and done the digging in the dirt. And he's figured out that there are no Qiblas within the first 100 years of Islam in these archaeological digs of these early mosques that face Mecca. They're facing the wrong direction. He makes a case for Petra, and I'm good with that, but they are definitely not facing Mecca. Go ahead. Say that again. Muhammad is mentioned what? Oh, yeah. Yeah, if he would have been a good businessman, what is he about? Well, didn't it start out like at 50? God tells Muhammad, you got to pray 50 times a day. You know, was it 100? Well, whatever it was, it's unreasonable. There's no way you could do it. You'd spend your entire day doing nothing but praying. You get nothing done, and you would starve to death. So that didn't make any sense. This is a city. Go ahead. I've watched, was it on Jay Smith's and he's had Mel on there, and Mel's gone through a lot of these inscriptions. Yeah, I've watched it passively. I've watched some of those, listened to them, but I haven't really sat down to pay close attention to it. But the Dome of the Rock, to me, is in my perspective, is just a testament to Antichrist. It isn't. Okay. So are you saying like the Crusaders would have destroyed it? Is that what you're saying? Okay. And that's probably true, because they're not known to playing nice with these guys, so that might be true. Okay. They very well may be, because it does say not three. That's one of the inscriptions that is on there. I do know that. And it's like I said, it's something to Antichrist. This is a city that's been cemented over to hide its origins or lack thereof. If you doubt me, you can go ahead and doubt me, but you cannot doubt. Oh my goodness, come on. What happened here? Hold on. I got this. No worries. Here it comes. Yeah, good luck with that. Good luck getting in the city itself. Okay, so stop screen, present, share screen, share audio, window, ba-bing, ba-boom. There we go. All right. This is, I played this a couple weeks ago. This is Google Earth. It's of Mecca, and this is the Kaaba right here, and this is a time lapse from 2005 to 2020. Okay, I got to turn the volume down on this. Where's the volume? Can you guys hear that? Can you hear that? Okay, it's blowing my ears out. But notice how all of this, hold on, let me go back here. I'll bring it right back. Notice how all of this is just getting cemented over. They're building everything upon all of this area right here, which would have been a 7th century Mecca. So all of these are pictures taken by Google Earth of the Kaaba, of Mecca, and it's just been completely built upon. Let's go to the end here. Whoops, go to the end. Okay, this is Mecca today, and that was Mecca 20 years ago. So the bottom line is that they have, when we start talking about, okay, there is no archaeological evidence for Mecca from the 20th century, or from the 7th century, there's no way you can get around that. That's an absolute fact. I'm trying to do something here. Rocks. Exactly. And that was one of the points that I brought up, because when you look at Jerusalem, every time they dig in the dirt around Jerusalem, they dig up artifacts. Every time Greece in the year 2000 hosted the Summer Olympics, and they went through this massive renovation and building project within Greece itself. And they had, when they were rebuilding, like let's say a subway or any, all these other buildings that they were building, they found so many artifacts from their digging in the dirt there. So many artifacts that they didn't have any room in museums anymore. So what they did was, this is kind of ingenious, in their subways, they built these display cases. So all of these artifacts that they were digging up, they put in the subway in these display cases. So as you're sitting there waiting for your train, you can sit there and look in these display cases and say, there's something that's 2,500 years old. Now, that's kind of neat. Now think about Mecca. Mecca is supposed to be this city that has existed. Adam and Eve are supposed to be in Mecca. Hello? I mean, that's at least 6,000 years ago, if you want to use Chronicles in the standard biblical timeline. But Abraham and Ishmael were supposed to have built the Kaaba. So you're supposed to have at least a 4,000-year history in Mecca. And when you look at this building project that they've gone through, and they don't have anything, there's nothing there, that's a problem. That is a huge problem. The only thing, Dan Gibson said that he went to an archaeological summit or conference, 3, 4, 5 years ago, and the only evidence that has been discovered in Mecca is from a 12th century Ottoman fort. That is huge. if you do that much building on a city that's supposed to have a 4,000 year history, that is a big, big, big problem. And that's a problem I wouldn't want to have with our Bible. And that's why I love our Bible. Okay. Anybody have anything they want to add to that about Mecca? I beat that dead horse for an hour and a half yesterday. I thought Bob was probably going to lose his mind sitting there listening to me drone on about that. But the bottom line is when we look at Mecca, Mecca has no history. It's like a black hole when you try to associate a 7th century Mecca and line all that stuff up. It doesn't line up because why? It doesn't exist. Okay. Perfect preservation of the Quran. Oh, my goodness. Let's see. I'm getting to that, Dominic. Thank you. Yeah, there's over 30. What is it, 37 of them? Yeah, thank you, Hatun. Okay, so the Qurans that we have, Dr. Dan Brubaker has found at least 4,000 variants in the few manuscripts that he has studied. And that's just the ones that he's been able to study. That doesn't include all of them that exist. And we remember that famous live stream that Yasser Qadhi and Muhammad Ajab did. Was that two, three years ago? I mean, that tells you everything that you need to know right there. And Yasser Qadhi even admits it has not been perfectly preserved. And I remember there was what's that guy's name? Chris, you debated him. Chris, what was that guy's, that's that imam's name up in Canada that you debated? That very popular. Shabir Ali. There you go. Shabir Ali. They had Shabir. Kenny Bomer had Shabir Ali come to his channel, and they were saying, well, the bottom line is that, well, it's just, what did you say? It was, different accents. Does that make sense? Is it different pronunciations? It's the way that the different accents that people, that's the differences right there. That's not true. That's absolutely not true. But they're so bent on keeping this lie that has been told, this Muslim myth that the Quran has been perfectly preserved. You cannot get away from that. What else? Okay, so when we look at the Quran, and this is where Muslims differ from Christians, because when we start talking about textual criticism of the Bible, and we start looking at the different variants that we have in the Bible, we as Christians don't find that problematic at all. And the reason why we don't find that problematic is because we have so many different manuscripts. If we only had one manuscript of the Bible, one ancient manuscript of the Bible, we wouldn't have any variants. And would that be a bad thing? Would we be able to know that manuscript that we have is the actual Bible that we're supposed to be having today? No. And this is where, as Christians, we don't look at textual variants as being problematic at all. And when we look at all the textual variants that exist, there's not one of them that provides any meaningful impact on our faith. Now, there are some stories like John was it chapter 7 and 8 with the woman caught in adultery. 1 John 5:8 where it talks about the Trinity or whatever verse that is. But there's really nothing in there that would have any type of meaningful impact on our faith. And Muslims don't see that way. And this is why it is so important for them to point these things out to us and say, look, your Bible has all these differences in it. The manuscripts do, and that's because we have 2.5 million pages of New Testament manuscripts in Greek. So yeah, it's not a problem for us. And these don't impact our faith. Last, what day was that? We were in a conference. It was, I think it was Tuesday. Tuesday, we were on a call with Bob the Builder, and we had all kinds of people on that call, and one of them was Adam Seeker. And Adam Seeker made the comment that one of the main reasons why he left Islam is because of this issue of perfect preservation. And it was, this is cool. It was that debate. He watched that debate between Jay Smith and Shabir Ali, and he was screaming at the television set or the computer or whatever he's watching it on, why don't you do something? Why don't you say something? Why don't you prove this kafir wrong? Well, it comes out that he's not wrong, that there are variants, and we have the copies of these different variants to demonstrate that the Quran has not been perfectly preserved. I don't see why that's a big deal. I mean, do you guys see why that's such a big deal? Yeah, when I was listening to Adam talk about that, I was actually shocked. I mean, if your faith is that shallow, where it's this is a pillar or this is a main tenet of your faith of perfect preservation, knowing that it's your scriptures have been handled by mankind, imperfect people, and you're going to demand that you're going to have all the way down to the last diacritical mark, and on top of that, diacritical marks did not exist in the 7th century when the Quran was supposedly compiled. So, okay, so you're saying that this blows their argument against the Bible out of the water if their own source is also, when we use the word corrupted, we're talking about, a misspelling of a name or a word or word order thing. So it's not the same exact thing that they had when it was originally revealed. And so if they can't argue that, then they cannot criticize. So it takes away one of the criticisms of Christianity. Is that what you're saying? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it's getting, it's fixing to. Well, it is now. It's going through this process now. The all of the findings that I think that are going to be revealed probably have not yet been completely published, but it's getting there. A lot of people more and more people are gaining access to these manuscripts. Can you be one? And my understanding is that the differences don't affect any of their core doctrine. I might be wrong on that. Am I? Okay, well, tell me one. Go ahead. Oh, so it'd be they contradict one another. Well, okay. Well, let me play devil's advocate. Let me act like I'm rad and play you silly kafir. Don't you understand that when Allah was shocked, he's conveying this shockedness to the prophet. So Muhammad, of course, is shocked. Why? Because Allah. I can see the arguments already, but I get what you're saying there. Yeah. Where they create contradictions or? There was one that was done the other day where it was talking about Pharaoh and how Pharaoh said that this magician, and then his magician said that this guy's surely a magician, something like that. I can't remember whose channel that was on, but I remember listening to that. Did you guys talk about that in Clubhouse, Chris, or was that on a YouTube show that I was? So it was a contradiction. Who's speaking? Was it the Pharaoh or was it the chief priest speaking? Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, okay. Well, all right. So there we go. Let's just, when we start talking about perfect preservation and we see that you have all of these different Qurans. I mean, how many different Qurans did Hatun come up with? Was there 36, 37? I mean, and I get this. I think you're exactly right, Chris, on this, is when you say that, well, if they can no longer use this, because one of the arguments is, well, how many different Bible versions do you have? I mean, is it the one with 66 books or is the one that 81 books or what? And so they would take that one with them. Yeah. You're breaking up there, Dominic. Yeah, he's frozen. He just got a new computer, too. Remember, guys, when we came, that Dave, that we came back, that first show we did coming back, I was still using this dinosaur that I got sitting behind me here. And StreamYard did something that I don't know what they did, but the bandwidth was just completely out of control. And I was pausing and lagging and da, 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 da. I went out and I got a new computer and this computer's doing fine. See, he's got the wheel of death. You see the wheel of death on Dominic there? Yep. See this? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's just come back to the original premise, though. When you start talking about perfect preservation and this mantra that we keep hearing that the Quran has been perfectly preserved, we know today, 2023, that that's simply not true. And we can prove it. Whereas if you back that up, let's say 20 years ago, were we able to do that 20 years ago? And the thing is no. So this is one of those other myths that we have been force-fed into believing. And unfortunately, they've tried to convince an entire, I don't know how many generations this is entailed. But now they've got entire generations of people believing that it's been perfectly preserved and that if it's not, they're leaving their faith, just like Adam Seeker did. Okay, let's jump back over here to, let's see, do I have another one here? No, okay. Does anybody have anything else they want to talk about perfect preservation on that? Let me put this on the side here. Okay. I see what you're saying. Sure. What? Whoa. So there's hold on. Let me make sure I understand what you're saying here, because this. Okay, so even up to 1924, because a manuscript is just a hand copied version of a book. So what you're saying is that even after the advent of the printing press, the earliest hand-copied Quran that they have is from 1924? I've heard about that, yeah, because it didn't conform with a certain manuscript. I was not aware of that. Okay, and I'm, let's see, okay, who is this Dr. Kufar Phobia with I'm too stupid to be present? I saw it when I brought him into the room, I like, this has got to be... this is not a political show. Today it's not, but yeah, I'm not gonna go there. Okay, so probably do that. We could probably do a whole show on that. That's not the plan. All right, let's move up to. Let's see, was that the last one? That was the last one. Okay, a scientific miracle. Now, how many people? Okay, by just a voice vote here, and I'm just gonna call on your name, and if the answer is yes, just come up on mic and say yes. If the answer is no, come up on mic and say no. How many people in here have heard an argument for the divine revelation of the Quran being that it has so many scientific miracles in it? Ed, have you heard this argument? Darcy, have you heard this argument? Aaron, have you heard this argument? Paul. Okay. Chris. Okay. And Kufar Phobia. Dominic. Isa, have you heard this argument before? Isa is abstaining from voting? He just casually listens in too, so I get it. Okay, so we've all heard this argument from, you know, it's a scientific miracle, and we've been, you know, trying to show one of the things that, if you all remember, and I'm not sure if she listens to this show anymore or not, but she used to promote this show, actually, was Gloria, whatever she went by. And one of the things where we were interacting on Facebook, going back and forth was that I can show you that the Quran has been perfectly preserved, or not perfectly preserved. I can show you that all the scientific miracles in the Quran. I'm like, okay, let's give me your best one. And she kept obfuscating and not bringing up just one argument showing that the Quran is a scientific miracle, a miracle only Muhammad would know if Muhammad received this information from God. So here are some of the miracles that we are often told that we have to believe, these Muslim myths. Number one, the sun sets in a muddy pool of water. Now, I'm sure we've all heard this one, but who in here has heard the rescuing device for this? Who in here can tell me how Muslims are, how they deal with this? Say that one more time, Paul. Dua Karnaeng, right? This is supposed to be Alexander the Great, and the verse goes is that Alexander the Great traveled so far to the west that he found the setting place for the sun, which is in a muddy pool of water, and there was a people that went around it. Now, I went there, and I tried to buy some of that real estate that they have there because they have this view every afternoon, and they weren't selling it. It was yeah, that's. Yeah, and they want to insert the words as if the sun sets, and that's yeah. Right. Yeah, creator in the earth, right, and the creator of the muddy pool of water too. It's allowed on this program. I think we allow that on. This is true. True. I agree with, yeah, well, okay, and it sets in a muddy pool of water. Well, you know, this is, I think this could be, if you were trying to develop some type of apologetic or a, if you're trying to develop some type of defense for this, excuse for this, you could say, well, okay, well, you say that the sun rises every morning and the sun sets every evening. But the sun does not do. This is just the rotation of the earth, and this is how we perceive it. And so this is how Alexander the Great perceived it. And but if you're going to put this in a divinely inspired book, this is stupid. And I would also add to this is that it also appears in the Tafsir. They're saying the same thing in the Tafsir, with the exception, I think, Al-Jalalain does not endorse this idea that it literally happens. But Ibn Abbas does, and Ibn Kathir both endorse it. Plus, there is a supporting hadith that goes with this, where Muhammad's riding a donkey with some guy. I guess this is just what they used to do back then, was ride around on donkeys. And he tells him, do you know where the sun sets? It sets in a muddy pool of water. So even have Muhammad saying this in a hadith, and we know that the hadith are all true because why? We have the science of the hadith to fall back on. Well, that makes sense. Because if you're out in the middle of the ocean, not that I spend any time out in the middle of the ocean, but if this is what you're seeing and you have no land around you to give you any type of bearings, the only thing you're seeing is the sun, and as it's going down, as the earth is rotating, it may give that appearance. I don't know, but the fact of the matter is that this demonstrates that the Quran is not a scientific miracle, but a joke for us to not to openly mock, but at least point out and say, look, if you want the Quran to be perfectly preserved, all right, that's fine. You can have perfectly preservation, but the perfect preservation is a scientific joke. Go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry. Well, that's the thing. People cannot stand to be mocked. I mean, if you ever want to know who you cannot criticize, who holds the power, it's those people that you're prohibited from mocking. And we clearly see here when we do a show like this that people don't like us mocking these things. They do crazy things. Well, there's so many different things out there that you just don't know what to believe. You know, in one part, or one, was it hadith, you have the moon chasing the sun around, or by the sun chasing the moon around, and then the sun prostrating. It's just crazy, some of the things they come up with. And this is exactly what you would think you would get from somebody that lived in the 7th century that had no access to any type of science at the time, let alone it being a miracle. Well, for one thing, if the sun ever went into a muddy pool of water here on the earth, with the sun being, I don't know how many millions of times bigger than the earth, we'd all be dead anyway, so it's kind of a moot point. Yeah. I would be looking for some place to go if that was it. Well, right. Okay. All right, let's, we beat that horse to death, I'm sure. Okay, the embryological cycle. is explained in detail. And we all know what it says about the embryological cycle. It says that it starts off like a clump of flesh, and then it very well may be. All right, let him. Okay, Joe, I'm an idiot. I'm an idiot. Come on up and explain this one to us. The one that says that it starts off as a clump of flesh, then the bones form, then the flesh form around the bones. Yeah, well, you know that you're more familiar with this than I am. Well, what we want to do is the only thing I want to demonstrate is the fact that this is not a scientific miracle. This guy might have seen women have miscarriages, and this is something that somebody at that time would have perceived. It wouldn't have been a scientific miracle at all, number one, because he doesn't get the cycle correct. That's the most important thing about it. And wasn't there some type of, wasn't there a Greek it was a Greek physician or a Greek scientist had developed an embryological. Yeah, there you go, Galen. He described basically the same thing. Hippolytus? Why would somebody want to do that? I just don't. I mean, when you clearly cannot, this is like Kenny trying to debate David Wood on whether or not it was okay for Muhammad to marry Aisha when she was 9 years old, or the age of Aisha when she was 9 years old. It makes zero sense to try to do that unless you're going to intentionally be dishonest during the debate. And then I guess that everything's, you know, all fair and love and war then. Okay, I have another one. We're not going to get through all these. We got to get going faster, guys. We have way too much knowledge here. You ever hear that? You have no knowledge, you kafir. I don't know how many times I've heard that. You have no knowledge. All right. Mountains or tent pegs? Yeah, when I first started engaging with Stefania on this scientific miracle that we find in the Quran, this was the one that she brought up. Well, it says in the Quran that nobody knew how deep the mountains went, and they're like tent pegs because they go so deep into the earth's surface. Who sees the problem with that? I mean, what is the problem with that? With that analogy. But doesn't a tent peg go into the ground, whereas a mountain pushes up out of the ground? I mean, it's the exact opposite of what you should have. Right. It's just so stupid. I don't even spend any time on it. But yeah, that was just dumb. Okay, what's another one here? Another one is stars or missiles. This is where the Quran says that stars are used as missiles to be thrown at jinn. Am I right on this? They're thrown at jinn. When prayers are going up to Allah to prevent. So number one, if a star was thrown at a jinn, a star is like our sun. That's what a star is our sun. So if that ever got that close to the human or to the earth's atmosphere, we would all be dead. So it would not only kill the jinn that it was intended to shoot down, but it would also kill everybody else that's sending these prayers up. So that makes That makes zero philosophical sense, makes zero theological sense, but it also makes zero scientific sense. Stars are not, shooting stars are not, or shooting stars are not stars. Shooting stars are objects entering into the Earth's atmosphere, heating up because of the friction, and appearing like a star. Allah is all-powerful. He knows, he can see the future. Okay, let's go to the next one. Let's see here. The Quran describes the Big Bang. Have you heard this one? I have heard this argument before, where the Quran perfectly describes the Big Bang, where everything's created ex nihilo, and there was a beginning. And number one, I don't... Well, this is, I'm just telling you the claim. But not, the first off, the Big Bang, the inflation theory, all of this stuff, I don't consider real science to begin with. And because in order to get there, you have to suspend, I'm not sure how many different laws of physics are you have to violate or suspend in order to have this rapid inflationary theory or this Big Bang thing to begin with. So you're going to have to far exceed the speed of light. You're going to have to far exceed the formation of matter. You're going to have to violate the first, second, and third laws of thermodynamics. You have all of these things going on that for the Big Bang to be true to begin with. Well, from this is my understanding, and this is the way that we were told to teach it, is that the universe began in an infinitesimal little dot. The entire universe was contained in a little dot, and then that dot exploded. Now, where that dot came from and what time and space that dot exploded into, well, we'll have to get back to you on that one, is what we're told. But again, so if you're going to say that the Big Bang, the Quran describes the Big Bang, well, then I would say, well, the Quran is scientifically laughable, because the Big Bang, when we look at it in of itself and start making application, scientific applications of natural law to it, it doesn't hold up either. You have to, in order to get all of these calculations, I think his name was Alan Guth. Was you know, we think of Stephen Hawking's being, you know, this, you know, this wizard of smart, which he was, but it was Alan Guth that actually came up with this idea that you would have to suspend the laws of physics in order for this thing to occur, inflationary theory anyway, in order to get this thing to occur. But then you have so many other scientists that will come out and say that this is something that, you know, 'cause science is supposed to be, you know, repeatable. Well, how, you know, you're never going to be able to repeat this. And even when you go back and try to retract or retrace what happened, you still can't do that. So the whole thing's a bunch of bunk as far as I'm concerned. Even if it does describe the Big Bang, which it doesn't, but let's pretend for a little bit. Okay. Well, that very well might be the one. You would know, yeah. Excuse me. Sorry. Yeah. I'll tell you what the scientific miracle is that biological systems actually believe that the Quran is from God. That's the miracle. Yeah. All right. Right. Yeah. I'm not going to go. That's politics. And would you stop with the politics? Okay. Where was I? Okay. So the next one, the perfect example for all time. Now I'm just going to go through these really quick. Because I'm trying, you know, let me just say this. I am trying to get away from this constant criticism of Muhammad. And the reason why I'm kind of trying to get away from it is because it comes across as being so offensive to some people, to Muslims. And the intent here on this show is not to offend people. It is to provide an accurate critique of Muhammad. This is true. And it is to provide accurate information, you know, to expose the truth of what happened back in the 7th century, supposedly happened back in the 7th century. But it's not to offend. But when you have somebody like this guy, as described in their own literature, it's kind of hard not to. You know, if you think that, you know, this guy was the perfect man for all time, well, no, he's not. Let's just go through a list here of things that Muhammad is said to have done during his lifetime. Number one, he robbed caravans, and he justified the robbing. Thou shalt not steal. You guys ever hear of that one? He justified the robbing because he says, well, when the Muslims were forced to make hijra to Medina, they had to leave all their belongings. So this was just a way of them recouping their belongings from them pagans. Two wrongs make a right. Man has justified his sin since the beginning of time. Yeah. And this is just another way of doing it. Yeah. He robbed caravans correctly. All right. Number two. He enslaved people. Now, if we were to look at our country's own history and we look at slavery, chattel slavery used in our country, we have, as a country ourselves, we have this stain of slavery on our hands, with the blood of slavery on our hands. This is true. And what we do today as 21st century human beings is we recognize that this practice, number one, let me just back up here just a second. This practice of slavery was forced upon the colonists. Let's just make sure we're clear upon this. It was forced upon the colonists by you blokes in England, Dominic. Your king at that time, kings at that time, forced it. And there was the colonies would vote in their assemblies to ban slavery in their colony, and the king would come in and veto that ban. Why? Because there was just so much money being made with slavery. And then when we declared our independence from England, 7 of the initial 13 colonies in 1777 banned slavery, saying, look, we're not having slavery in our country or in our colony anymore. Why? Because it has been forced upon us by England. And we are the only country to go through a civil war, tore our guts out for 4 years, cost over 600,000 lives in order to end this practice. And oh, by the way, the abolitionist movement was a movement that came out of the second Great Enlightenment. So it was a Christian movement to include England's banning of slavery with William Wilberforce. So all of these things that when we start talking about slavery and ending slavery, is a uniquely Christian practice. Whereas if we look at what Muhammad did, Muhammad would fight wars and enslave women, children, and rape women and children, encourage his soldiers to do so, or at least not, if you're going to say, well, he didn't encourage them. No, he did, but let's just pretend that he didn't. He allowed it and enabled them, and there are Sahih Hadith that support this. And then he would himself owned, bought, sold slaves. And I know, he malumated slaves. He did free a few slaves. This is true. But that did not end slavery in Islam. Slavery still exists in Islam today. You go to Libya today. You go to Mauritania today. Slavery still exists in Islam. The richest man that ever lived prior to Bill Gates and this, who's a Bezos guy, whatever that guy, Amazon guy, was a slave trader, Manasseh Musa, from the kingdom of Mount Mali. He spent a great amount of his wealth proliferating Islam and building all of these madrasas and mosques all throughout his kingdom. And he was just following the Sunnah of Muhammad, which was practicing slavery. Go ahead, Darcy. It does. It's in the Reliance of the Traveler. Absolutely. Darcy, what were you saying? I didn't. You kind of came and broken up. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And we would all agree from a Christian perspective that that is wrong. From an American perspective, of course, we would agree that it's wrong. But from a Christian perspective, we would agree that it's wrong. And I know that the Bible has slavery in it. It's not the same. And when people try to make that argument, it's sick. It really is. What was that, Ed? Yeah, much of it was indentured servitude. And when we look at people migrating from Europe during the colonial period, and even after the colonial period, they would sell themselves of indentured servitude. They were practicing it with the Portuguese. The Portuguese were exploiting, they were transporting African slaves into Arab countries. The trans-Saharan slave trade going eastward was twice the size of the transatlantic slave trade going westward. So yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. There have been some examples of that, right, yeah. And were they a bunch of Buddhists that were doing this or what? That is amazing when we look at that. Not that we want to say that, you know, just by somebody's name. Yeah, you're right. What they're doing is it's still practiced. Let's just put it that way. It is still practiced today in a lot of the Islamic world, and it's sad. And the reason why it is still practiced is because it is Sunnah. It is what Muhammad did. Okay, can we move on? Can we move on? We're going to move on, whether or not we get permission or not. Here we go. The next one. He raped and encouraged the rape of captured women. Again, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but when we look at what your right hand possesses, we see this in several of the battles where women were divided. I mean, just what was the name of that city where they took was it Khaybar, where they slaughtered all the Banu Qurayza tribe? And they slaughtered all the men and kept all the women and parceled the women out. Well, it was the Banu Qurayza. I know it was the Banu Qurayza tribe. Right. Well, in the requirement, in order, if you were a male, to keep from being killed wasn't whether or not you were against the Muslims, it's if you had gone through puberty or not. That was the requirement. Yeah, and that just, oh my gosh. Anyway, let's keep this freight train going. He murdered and had people murdered. I've done several shows on this when we talked about the Sunnah of Muhammad. This is going to be in my book, which is going to be published in 2032. It's going to outline a lot of the things that are described as era in the Hadith literature, where people would criticize, you know, I could see in wartime, you might want to execute people that are committing treason against you. Okay, I guess that's fine. But the people that he had killed were simply criticizing him. And so this tells you how thin-skinned this guy was. And this, again, sets a standard of conduct. This is Sunnah. And since it's Sunnah, this is where we get things like Charlie Hebdo occurring. And all the fallout from that. This is where we get, what was that place where they went and they had to draw the Muhammad contest? That was in Texas. It was outside of Dallas. Garland. There we go. Garland, Texas is where you get two guys from Phoenix, Arizona, drive from Phoenix clear to Dallas to start whacking these people at this Draw the Muhammad contest. This is where you get this. This is where any form of criticism of Muhammad is viewed as apostasy, and apostasy or blasphemy, and blasphemy is considered a form of apostasy, and apostasy is punishable by death. Okay, let's go to the next one. The next one is what? He married his daughter-in-law. Now, okay, this is... Yeah, and he gets a divine revelation. The God of the universe provides a divine revelation to Muhammad to do this so as he could set an example to show that it's okay to marry the former wives of your adopted sons. Who in here has ever known anybody? Who in here has ever known anybody who's had an issue where people would go through some type of legal battle, and in as reprobate as our country has become in legalizing things and saying things are perfectly constitutional to do, who has ever heard of somebody wanting to marry the divorced wife of their son or their adopted son? Has anybody known anybody, been in a situation to know anybody like this? Okay, so would there be a reason why somebody would have to set an example to say that this is permissible? If nobody's ever heard of this happening before, nobody. Well, there's a reason why it's against the culture, because it's gross, it's icky. It's a perversion of the institution of marriage. And one of the most human things we do is we adopt other people's children if somebody, you know, with a parent dies or is unable to take care of them. And he did away with that. That it's just, okay, let's go to the next one. We're almost out of time, folks. We got to get going here. Muhammad committed adultery. This is where he is caught. This is where he's caught in his wife's bed, Hafsa's bed, I believe it is. He's caught with Mary the Copt. And once he's caught, he, you know, cries, please, please forgive me. I'll never do it again. He didn't want Aisha to find out, from what I understand, the way this thing rolled. But then, the God of the universe provides Muhammad a revelation saying, you know, why I've given you this slave woman, your wife, your right hand possesses her. So why are you, you know, why are you making promises to these wives of yours that you won't do this again? Oh man, here we are. Hey, you're right. Woody Allen. George Harris of the Beatles. Way to go, Gabriel. Good dig. Good find. But all those guys are sickos. And isn't George Harris from England or something? Sorry, Dominic. I didn't mean to go. That's the... Scotland, Ireland, Wales, all them great islands. Harrison. It was George Harrison. George Harrison, Liverpool. Oh, well, yeah, that's in it. Yeah, okay. Okay. That's just sick thinking about that. But this is Suna, so we have to look at what this perfect example for all time did. Let's go to the next one. He was a child spouse abuser. With that, what I mean by that is that he received a divine revelation that enabled men to beat their wives if they fear, not if they are women are disobedient to their husbands, but if they fear disobedience. It's right there in the Sharia. We've read this several times, Paul, where we've seen that this is provided for because it's in the Quran, where it says that you admonish them. What is it? You admonish them, then you band them to separate beds, and then you beat them. And it doesn't say beat them lightly, or it doesn't say beat them with a toothbrush. Yeah, that's if you fear rebellion is what it says. So this, again, he was an abuser, and he hit Aisha. He hit her in the chest because she followed him one night, or she thought he was catting around the camp there, I guess, and yeah, she punched her in the chest. Wow, take that. Anyway, and then lastly, but certainly most, not the least, is that, and this is what I just can't get past that. And we've spent way too much time and breath and capital discussing that. And the fact of the matter is that what this guy did to that little girl is unforgivable. You just cannot celebrate the life of a man who not only did that just one time, saying, okay, well, you know, I'm just going to do this one time. He marries this girl and did this every single night. 18. Yeah. I can't. So these are some of the Muslim myths that we are told that we have, that we're required to believe. You can believe them if you want, but you're right. This is what they believe. They believe that all the prophets are sinless once they become prophets. So everything that they did prior to that is okay. The problem with that is that Muhammad was supposedly had already been receiving his revelations, had already become a prophet. So how can you say that type of behavior is not sinful? Yeah, I agree. Okay, so I'm going to close down the show, guys. I appreciate everybody coming here on Sunday, people that were in chat. I appreciate all the comments and the facts that you guys write in there. It's always great to read that as we're going along. And everybody that participates on the panel, again, I know that you guys could be doing all kinds of things on your Sunday afternoon and coming here and spending time here and having these discussions. Means a lot. And I appreciate every single one of you for coming out here and doing that. Even if you're not an idiot, when you do this, who is it? It's just getting back. Yeah. He made a comment, was it last week? He goes, I might be a white boy, but I ain't stupid. Well, I don't know, but you know, some of the things that this guy, I could spend all night talking about this guy and how disgusted I am with, and it's not him personally, but I could just talk about his policies and just forget about his physical abilities to execute that office, which is scary. Yeah, this could be. Well, Well, see, they don't have spreadsheets that are 50 columns long like you do. I mean, that's, you know, who actually tracks all of these things. So they can get away with it because you're common Joe like me. I don't know how they exactly arrive at those numbers, but I do know that they're easily manipulated. Yeah, and that's exactly what's going on. That's exactly what, as Ed alluded to, I think this is, and I hate to say it, but I think it is God's judgment on our country. And, you know, God help us. Let's just pray that people hear the voice of the Lord and it forces them to wake up and realize how evil this ideology that are being pushed, not only, but, you know, through politics, but also through our schools. In our society at home. Okay, guys, thank you again so much for coming, and we will see you not next week. I'm going to upload, as a matter of fact, I will upload that Bob the Builder video next Sunday, so if y'all want to come on by and take a look at it and see what was done during there, it was great fun. And then we'll be back the following Sunday, which will be the 26th, I believe it is, and we might talk about Joe Biden. All right. God bless y'all. We'll see you then. All right. Let me go over and shut it down on Blog Talk Radio.